For death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us tonight to join the conversation is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and listen to the live stream from that location also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. That's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, which is in the Black Belt. And listen to the live stream from that location. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. and in a tuning search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the auxiliary connection. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media, the homepage is there. 98% of the changes have been made. You'll see on the cover page, it's announcements there of the current additional programs and plus a few of the upcoming programs. So if you click the link on those pages, it'll take you to the show's cover pages and their podcasts, which will be loaded, as they populate. The one program does have podcasts, Revive, and a few others will have podcasts very shortly. So, like I said, 98% of the changes have been made. Just a few more window dressings to be done in regards to the additional programs. But that should be one of your favorites. But if not, put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're in Freestyle Friday again. Anything that's on your mind, give us a call. There's a lot of things been going on this week, and we'll touch on a few things in open form. But I know you have things on your mind, so this is the time to do it. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with the program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American History Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How you feel tonight?
Oh, the day was beautiful, even with the rain. I feel great.
Yeah, well, you better enjoy it, because that 60-degree temperature is only going to last one day. I think we're going back down to the 30s tomorrow, and I think it's going to be in the teens by Sunday night.
So yeah, let it come.
It was short-lived, Richard.
With the refresher.
At least it got rid of a lot of the snow and ice that we had hanging around.
And I know for people with cars, it probably helped them out too, because I noticed people were complaining about the, the things, I guess, from the salt.
The road salt, you know, yeah.
What's going on in cars.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're in open forum this evening, Richard. Anything that's on the caller's mind, they can give us a call, throw out some issues. Before we kind of get started in some things, I know you wanted to make some community announcements.
Yes, and you know, I'm excited about both. This year is the 35th Ancient Kemetic Studies Conference, well, ASCAT, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization. And you know, Ellie, I used to be one of the developing members in the Mid-Atlantic region, so I'm always been excited, you know, in looking at our ancient civilization, and here that is coming to Philadelphia, the national conference. I'm really excited, and the president, the present regional representative, is informed me that they have received 50 abstracts in reference to the conference, and if Elliot, excuse me, if I can, could I just go over the description of the conference, which is, you know, one of the announcements I think is important for listening audience to hear.
Certainly.
And the president of ASCAT, Dr. Mario Beattie, who is at Howard University, who teaches Kemetic studies, put the description: in the spirit of our ancestors, our Pan-African global family, and the yet unborn, ASCAT extends a warm invitation to you to join us for our 35th annual Ancient Kemetic Egyptian Civil Studies Conference. Our 2018 theme is Intellectual Warfare Against the Assault on African Humanity, African Answers for a New Reality. In March of 2018, we will gather in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at the Community College of Philadelphia to celebrate our past 34 years of existence, and to not only renew our moral obligation and responsibility to counter the political, cultural, and psychological oppression of African people, but to continue to promote the to promote, preserve, and disseminate African culture and intellectual enlightenment that sustains our humanity and is the foundation of our liberation. Our intellectual warfare and struggle for liberation is grounded, strengthened, and deepened by systemic and comprehensive knowledge of who we are as an African people in time and space, and how we utilize this knowledge and our values to create and work to implement African answers for a new reality. Thus, we are in a war not just against white supremacy and its assault on African humanity, but we are also engaged in a battle for the African mind, as Anderson Thompson, co-chair of ASCAP Research Commission and one of our revered elders, often tell us. I thought that laid out exactly what we are all engaged in. And I just want to reemphasize that this March, the 18th, that those who can come to Philadelphia and attend this here conference, I think they will be inspired, informed, and be given some deep tools, as Baba Jacob Carruthers used to say, for us to be able to dig in that deep well, go into that deep well and bring up those African answers for a new reality. So that's one of the events that is occurring in Philadelphia, and we like to continue to help in the, making sure that this national conference, this international conference, is of great success in Philadelphia, because we do need African answers for this new reality. And I think that when we go into our ancient civilization that is recorded, we can be able to see a lot of things that we can be able to use in this time. So that's one of the events that is occurring. And the other one is the 150th anniversary of the birth of Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois. And it's interesting for me, you know, this will be a whole year in Philadelphia of different activities starting January 23rd through the 25th. And then every month, February, they'll have a symposium on Philadelphia Negro past and present. Another one, Pan-African and Pan-Asian, A World United for Humanity in March. They'll have various book readings of Du Bois' work. And then another symposium in June on the liberation of women. And in July and August, they will have a break and recollect, and come back in September with another symposium, Formation of the American Working Class. And in September, the end of September, November, there'll be more book reading. So this is a whole year, which will end in December, a symposium, Du Bois and Baldwin, the civilizational question. And it's just interesting that these two go together, because Du Bois was one of the intellectual scholars of, you know, Africans in the New World, who made us go back and who pushed us to consider, to look at ourselves as a civilization, a continuous of a civilization. And I would suggest to people to look at his Conservation of Race, the paper that he did for the American Negro Academy back in the late 1900s, because in there he started to lay out what most people utilize as the start to develop or continue to develop. Alexander Crummell actually developed, and excuse me, I got a little cold, so I keep the phlegm comes up, but Alexander Crummell was the one that started the ideal of the talented 10th, and Du Bois built on that ideal. But Du Bois, for Western scholar, Western science, really, his intellectual property is the whole science of sociology. So that's another year-long event that will be going on in Philadelphia for those who wish to attend, and to celebrate his 150th anniversary of Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois' birth. Those are the two events that are happening in the city that I like for the listening audience to be aware of?
You know, because we got two calls on hold, and I'm going to go right to them in a minute, Richard. But let me say this, that the theme of the conference, which you stated, you said they have 50, what was that again that came in?
Abstracts, people who are writing papers, you know, submitting papers in relationship to this particular theme. Okay. So there's an excitement of people who want to contribute, you know, and I understand some from Philadelphia also. And I know probably in the cities that people are listening from, there are also members that will be coming to Philadelphia to share their compilation of knowledge and understanding to answer, to address the question of the African answers for a new reality.
Now, again, you know, what you're describing is something that we talk about here on Time for Awakening is a major think tank.
Yes.
Coming here. You know, it's clear that the theme of the conference, African Answers for a New Reality, is a must, because we haven't been coming up with African answers or culturally based answers for our problem. We have been coming up with sometimes a blend of cultural answers and European summations for a problem that we're having here. It's a little interference in the back. If you look, Richard, at the when we had Dr. James Lance Taylor on, and he talked about during the civil rights movement, some of the positions that was put out there by other people. We talked with Cynthia McKinney last week, and she reflected back to the formation of the NAACP and who formed it, the ideas that was put out there for our people to follow, so to speak, the quest for equality in the society, something that's almost like a carrot on a stick. You know, our people are so preoccupied, some of them, with seeking equality in the society, when we should start rallying around one another to develop a sovereignty or a sovereign mindset among our people. That'll really move our people forward, not them chasing this carrot of seeking equality and basically asking Europeans to give you equality. That in itself doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So,
and that's a project that, as you say, that's been going on. So
exactly. So when you're saying that the theme of this think tank is African Answers for a New Reality, you can't think of any more subject that's more apropos to what we're dealing with now.
Yes.
You know, some of our people think it's a shock when they see this guy that's in office now making all kind of racist statements. But it shouldn't be a shock. Maybe it's a shock that they're saying it openly. But these type of things been said all the time by almost every president that has taken office in that has sat in that office.
There you go.
I'm going to reflect back on some of the comments by some of these guys later on. We'll take a couple of these calls because, you know, I can always jump back into some of the other things. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to 267. 267.
Yes. Good evening, brothers.
How are you, sir?
How are you doing?
Everything's good. Richard, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Oh, man, I'm looking at this news media and this president that says anything out of his mouth or how he feels. At least you know how he feels. Not favorable. Well, my thing is that looking at this person in office who's damaging the country, has his mind set on white supremacy, what are black people going to do about this situation? In other words, Richard, they're in a Democratic Party, they're in a Republican Party. Some people are in the church, some people are Jehovah's Witnesses, but they don't vote. You got people, they're in various religions, Hebrew, Israelites, and some people to separate it into mere groups of Black Lives Matter and Black Panther Party, New Black Panther Party. And you just have your average voter, Republican, Independent, and Democrat. But in the midst of that, what do Black people want? In other words, Richard, they've had president, they had one president that was Black. They've had mayors, they had council people, state reps all over the country. Still in the same predicament. But we are not together on one accord as a people who have a think tank putting our economics and resources in some type of bank and moving forward on goals and objectives, social, economic, and political order. So I'm saying that to say that how do we come together to fight the situation? Where's the answer? How do we go? What direction? How do you get everybody together? Because we're not going to all be in the same religion, no. We're not all part of the same organization, no. But we're under attack. And we're not fighting back. We have our traitors amongst us that look like us. We have those of us who you wouldn't mind having solidarity with and working with. But you have so much weight on us and baggage that I don't know. Give me some answers. How do we go out? How do we go about this? What do we do about people who are outwardly telling us, we don't want you here. We don't want no Africans and Haitians. Anything that ain't white, we don't want it here. Shit old countries. He didn't mention this one, though. He said those countries are shit old.
Now,
I want to know how we go about this. What do we do?
Now, let me ask you two questions, Brother Timothy from Philadelphia. If you had, now, if you were in, just say if you was in an apartment, and the apartment always needed, there's something always wrong with it. It needs repairs constantly. And the landlord don't want to fix anything. And he say, well, listen, you don't have to stay here, Tim. You can leave. Then what should you be, all of your focus should be doing what?
I've been in a predicament like that before.
No, but I've just asked you a question. All of your focus should be doing what?
I would move. You're supposed to move.
Okay, so
apartment.
Exactly. Now, the comments that this president has made, a lot of the other presidents haven't made those exact comments, but their actions basically is in the same mindset as what this guy has been doing. They have basically been telling Black people ever since chattel slavery ended that they want you out of here. In fact, this man, if you look at, and Richard can attest, the early 1800s, one of their greatest thinkers, and notice I said their greatest thinkers, was coming up with ideas then to get Black people out of society because they knew eventually that they couldn't keep up with chattel enslavement in this country. They knew eventually that Black people would be walking around so-called free in society because they was doing that in the early 1800s. But Jefferson was coming up with ideas to get Black people out of here. It just so happens that he didn't keep getting the congressional support or whatever, the Senate support or whatever. They did send some out and went to Liberia. But they were coming up. They never envisioned Black people just walking around free in society. When they came here to these shores in the west, this hemisphere, and they enslaved other people, whether in South America, native population, the native population of the islands when they first got there, and some of the native population in this country, the ones they didn't kill and run off. They figured if they would work those people, that they would end up just dying off. Some of the native populations in other areas just died off with contact with this man. Our people were different. History bears that out. That's not me making just a silly statement. Our people were different because we were resilient to this man. And I mean, I'm talking about even the diseases that other nationalities was dying from. Our people was resilient to contact with this man. And the more he enslaved us, the more in population we kept growing instead of shrinking. So in all of his halls of his hallowed halls, that was the major conversation. What do we do about these black folks? He didn't include your name in the Constitution because all of the time it was conversations about what this, I'll use the term Negro problem. Richard, can you attest to what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's, you know, it's, I'm looking at this address of a colored Negro at the Colored Negro Convention in 1853, when they say, by birth, we are American citizens. By the principles of the declarations, we are American citizens. And then they go on and say, as a people, we feel ourselves to be not only deeply injured by grossly misunderstood but grossly misunderstood. What stone has been left unturned to degrade us? So to me, that just reemphasizes your point. It's like even then they recognize that, and you started, you know, from the beginning with Jefferson, that this country had no place for African people.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it. They had use for us when we were building this country. But after that, it was really no place for black people here. We're here. And he can't. It's almost like we've been an albatross around his neck. But they've been trying. Listen, it's time for us, the people that haven't developed that mentality, instead of trying to force your way, this man, he's the landlord of this particular society, and he's been telling you to get out, and you've been saying, I'm staying, and the pipe's busting, and there's roaches in the place, and you're living in squalor. And when I say living in squalor, I'm just using that analogy of a rundown apartment and a slumlord as your landlord. It's time for you to start developing a mentality to move your people out of here.
Or at least
other venues. If some people want to stay, everybody's not going to say if all black people could leave this country today, I venture to say, and this is just my opinion, it's a good percentage of people that will stay here. But you still got to have that option to have a better life elsewhere. And the homeland is a major alternative. It's work that has to be done there, because the same mentality that exists in this country among black folks exists in the motherland. It's major work that has to be done because all of our people have been exposed to European thought and white supremacy, and it has affected our people. It's clear. But go ahead. I didn't want to cut across you. Go ahead.
No, you did good. Here's the thing. And you both added to the comments that are very important. You gave us some good position in fact. But like you said, some people want us to remain here and some people want to go. But in leaving, his goal is the majority of them have ever had us here working like a pool of fools and slaves. That's the whole idea. Is the enslavement is in your mind. Physically leaving for some people is good. I wouldn't mind having dual citizenship in certain parts of the East, things of that nature. But like you said, you leave from one place to the other. You got to deal with the result of colonization in certain parts of the continent. Then you got to deal with your own people brainwashed. So changing the mentality from one place to another, and those that don't want you to leave. Because if we were to have left, we were able to do it through Marcus Garvey and previous people before that. They act like they want you to go, and then when they see you had a looking for an exit and how to get there, they will stop you. They would try to stop you. Because in his mind, it is not beneficial for you to really leave like that. I need you here. So what do black people want to do? Do they want to leave and secure
economic and political base, wherever they got to go, they need the resources. Because all the resources that we had over there, he took it out. I don't even know if they had cocoa left. Are they fighting over that now? So are we going to leave and have a resource only to keep us in perpetual motion to live as a people? With all the mindset that we're leaving as a Christian, we're leaving as a Hebrew Israelite, we're leaving as a Muslim, we're leaving as an independent, we're leaving as a Republican, we're leaving as, going away with the madness that we have in our brain, we're bringing it there. Always, most of us want to stay here because we're comfortable. And once we go over there, I ain't going over there. It should stay over there. I ain't a part of that.
Well,
see, the battle's in the sky. The battle's in your brain, too. That's the other part of it.
Listen, I agree with you, man.
But we got to get together, man, because at this present time, we've been to a lot of places. Our people have gone to a certain level of education. We should be able to conquer a lot of that. So what are the problems amongst the African-American that's a problem before we get there? And how we get there, what are the problems that we have to solve to stay there? Because freedom is in the mind, man. It's just not geographical. And like you said, he's been telling us, he don't want you. And what does he give you? He gives you nothing. Hopes and dreams. You got to be pretty big over here. I'm not going over there. Some people still don't want to be called African American. They don't want to still relate with black.
Yeah, well,
it's a hard shell to crack, man.
Yeah, well, hopefully, because there's a lot of things going on. I think we highlight them. We try to highlight them when we come on the program. And there's other programs that highlight things going on that is trying to move our community forward. In fact, the announcement that Richard gave about the ASCAP conference and the major theme of African Answers for a New Reality. See, those are the type of think tanks that need to be going on in all cities, dealing directly with...
Smart, good thing, Richard. And you have in your mind a think tank. I said a black thing, a think tank. Money going in one location, in one treasury, with a think tank with progressive black people. Getting them together and putting it there. You put all the red ribbon in the politics side. Just getting at it, go where you could be, where you're free. And freedom is your own hospitals, your own restaurants, your own schools, your own institutions.
But, you know, I have to say, though, and this because of the week's news, especially what came out of 45 and other activities that I know you'll bring up, Elliot, the thing that rolled around to me that I think is important for those of us who, and we have to be clear where our position is, but either way, what I dread, and I'm going to say that, you know, at this point in my life, what I dread in not hearing is one thing that I picked up in Dr. Malefe Asante's Afrocentricity, and that's the consciousness of victory. You know, because when we hear ourselves talk, regardless of which camp we're in, which civilization we represent, the civilization or that is trying to maintain, and that's African people who are trying to maintain European dominance or European white supremacy, trying to maintain that civilization by their participation, or African people who are continuing the development, the long march, or going to that deep well of continuing the development of African civilization from pre-commit to now. And that is with the Ma'afa. Whatever one of those camps that you're in, that we're in, that it just behooves us, even if we don't have the specific roadmap that we have and that we project the consciousness of victory. Because if we don't, then it seems to me the feedback we get and the responses we give is always from the perspective, or always from the position of being defeated. Now, the future is what you create, and in one respect is unknown. But if you state from the inception of your giving, you know, your own voice that you're going to lose or that you're losing, then to me it seems that we are not projecting the consciousness of victory, putting that, as some others would say, in the universe, and therefore for our children to be able to hear that they can be victorious. So that's the only, that's one of the things. And we can use history to show our history after the Maafa and our present history that victory has been achieved. And Ella, you had mentioned that in relationship to other people under the kind of brutality that we have been under do no longer exist.
So we have to protect. At least have the mindset of that. Because we've got a lot of enemies amongst our race.
Right.
A lady has a book out called The Big Crab. It's based on Dr. Cornel West and this guy Coates. She said every time we turn around, if someone is progressively moving up, you always have a former leader trying to snatch him down. Now, she says Cornel West is constantly talking against this guy, and he seems to be doing a positive thing. We always got those people even amongst us that's snatching us down. Her position, of course. See, to have that mindset of the future, of positive things to go forward, I go with that. At least have that in your brain. But look at those amongst us who pulls back. And look inside, there's enemies of people pulling back. Now, whether people like me live inside or not, the plan and goal is, you said, to think positive about the future in order to get there, at least think about it.
Think about winning.
Right.
Be
the ultimate goal.
Brother Tim, thank you for your contribution, man.
All the time. Good conversation. Always good talking to you and listening to you.
Right.
Peace.
Peace. Brother Richard, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We got some calls on hold. You can be involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. When we come back also, I want to share with you some comments made, because some black folks was up in arms about comments by Trump. But I want to share with you some other comments made so we can put this in historical perspective. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
You have the emergence in human society of this thing that's called the state. What is the state? The state is this organized bureaucracy. It is the police department. It is the army, the navy. It is the prison system, the courts, and what have you. This is the state. It is a repressive organization. But the state, and well, you know, you've got to have the police, because if there were no police, look at what you'd be doing to yourselves. You'd be killing each other if there were no police. But the reality is, the police become necessary in human society. Only at that juncture in human society, where it is split between those who have and those who ain't got.
I throw a Molotov cocktail at the precinct. You know how we think. Organize the hood under our chain banners. Red, black, and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And I'm hitting cameras in the streetlight watching society. With no respect for the people's right to privacy. I take a slug for the cause like Huey P. While all you fake niggas try to copy Master P. I wanna be free to live, able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. We do for self like ants in a colony. Organize the wealth into a socialist economy. A way of life based off the common needs. And all my comrades is ready, he just spreading the seed.
The average black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate?
No more bondage, no more political monsters, no more secret space launches. Government departments started it in the projects, material objects, thousands up in the closets. Could have been invested in the future for my comrades. Battle contacts, primitive weapons out in combat. Many never come back, pretty niggas be running with gas. Rather get shot in they back than fire back. We tired of that, corporations hiring blacks. Denying the facts, exploiting us all over the map. That's why I write the shit I write in my raps. It's documented, I meant it. Every day of the week, I live in it, breathing it. It's more than just fucking believing it. I'm holding in ones, rolling up my sleeves and shit. It's C-Lo for push-ups now. Many headed for one conclusion. Niggas ain't ready for revolution.
The average black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate? We living in a police state.
Time for an awakening. Freestyle Friday, open forum. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Boy, let me get this here straightened out. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
Hold on 1 second. Yeah, you know, before we go back to the phones, let me, because, listen, I got a business to deal with the public, and a lot of folks are coming in, and they were upset by Trump's comments in reference to Africa and Jamaica, Haiti, the islands, their reference to black people.
Mm-hmm.
But let me read... your friend, Brother Richard, Ibram Zendi, he wrote a article for publication, and I'm going to read some of the comments he made. It's called "The 11 Most Racist U.S. Presidents." Now he kind of put them in an order, but you don't have to put them in an order, and he only put 11 here. That comments that I play before every show. But Elder John Henry Clark saying history is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. All you got to do is spend a little time and do a little research and look back at some of these presidents and the comments that they made or the policies that they pushed, and you'll see that it's no different than basically this guy in here now. But let me read, before we go back to the phones, let me read from his thumbnail sketch of the 11 most racist U.S. presidents. There's been, here's their article. There has been many frightfully racist U.S. presidents in American history. Here are 11 of what I consider the most racist U.S. presidents of all time. Now, he goes from the 11th to number one on the charts. So we'll start with the with his 11th. In number 11 position, George Walker Bush, the 43rd president from 2001 to 2009. These are his comments. Not only did President Bush's No Child Left Behind Act in 2003 increase the stranglehold of standardized testing on America's children, tests anti-racists have long argued are racist. No Child Left Behind more or less encouraged funding mechanisms that decreased and did not increase funding to schools where students are struggling and not making improvements on tests, thus privately leaving the neediest students, black students, behind. 2 years later, President Bush's Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, publicly left thousands of stranded black folks behind after Hurricane Katrina hit on August 29, 2005. While reporters quickly reached the Gulf Coast, federal officials made excuses for their delays, quickening the death spiral in New Orleans and ensuring that President Bush would land on the list of the most racist presidents of all time. And to top it all off, President Bush's economic policies, his lax regulation on Wall Street loaners and speculators, helping bring into being the Great Recession and bringing in the largest loss of black wealth in recent history. Number 10, Calvin Coolidge, Jr., the 30th president, 1923 to 1929. President Bush's FEMA response to Hurricane Katrina seemed prompt when compared to President Coolidge's handling of the Great Mississippi Flood of 1927. Most white communities were saved. Riverside black communities were flooded to reduce the pressure on levees. And then these thousands of displaced blacks were forced to work for their rations under the gun of the National Guard and area planners, leading to a conflagration of mass beatings, lynchings, and rapes. Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover, who President Coolidge eventually appointed to head the relief effort, capitalized on Southern segregationist support for his flood mismanagement and succeeded Coolidge into the White House. President Coolidge also signed arguably the most racist immigration act in history, an act championed by Republican eugenists and Democratic Klansmen. The Immigration Act of 1924 was also co-authored by Washington Congressman Albert Johnson, well-schooled in the theories of the yellow peril that had rationalized discrimination against Asians for decades. The bipartisan measure further restricted the immigration from Southern and Eastern Europe and severely restricted African immigrants and banned immigrants from Arab and Asian countries. America must be kept American, President Coolidge said during his first annual message in Congress in 1923. Number 9, Dwight David Eisenhower, the 34th president, 1953 to 1961. Most presidents made this list for what they did. President Eisenhower made this list not so much for what he did, but what he did not do. He made the list as a representative of all those U.S. presidents who did not stop the trepidation of slavery and segregation and mass incarceration. When NAACP lawyers persuaded the Supreme Court to rule Jim Crow as unconstitutional in 1954, President Eisenhower did not endorse Brown versus Board of Education and dragged his feet on enforcing it. I lost my place. At the White House dinner the year before, President Eisenhower had told Chief Justice Earl Warren he could understand why Southern senators, white Southerners, wanted to make sure their sweet little girls are not required to sit alongside some big black buck on a school bus. He reluctantly sent federal troops to protect Little Rock Nine, who were desegregated and in Arkansas High School. He considered that act to be the most repugnant of all his presidential acts. During those critical years after the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education, this former five-star World War II general did not wage war against segregation. He remained as much a blame as anyone for his persistence and for the lives lost fighting it. Number 8, James Knox Polk, the 11th president, 1845 to 1849. In the 1840s, Western expansion in the U.S. was uniting white Americans, while Western expansion of slavery was dividing white Americans. Months after President Polk took office, John O'Sullivan had imagined white Americans' manifest destiny to possess the whole of the continent, which the province has given us. President Polk leaned on his racist idea when his administration waged the Mexican-American War. War propagandists framed the U.S. as bringing freedom and civilization to the backward Mexicans. For the war spoils, the U.S. seized from Mexico nearly all, which is now the American Southwest, a gargantuan land seizure that mirrored the ongoing violent seizures of Native American land and the ongoing violent seizures of black labor. President Polk led the fight against those politicians and activists pressing the ban of slavery into new Southwest territories. This lifelong slaveholder was angrily hated by anti-slavery Americans as the leader of the Western, leading the West marching slave power. Indeed, President Polk wanted slavery to extend to the Pacific Ocean. He looked away as white slaveholders and non-slaveholders danced around the legal protections for Mexican landowners ascribed in 1848 Treaty of the Guadalupe Hidalgo, and went on to illegally steal land and the new group of Mexican-American citizens. President Polk started a forgetful history in the Mexican Southwest and a long history of racism against Mexicans inside and outside the U.S. borders. The history of racism is now fueling the campaign of Donald Trump. This article was written just before Trump took office. Number 7, Thomas Woodrow Wilson, the 28th president, 1913 to 1921. The same reasons why anti-racist students have been pushing recently for Princeton to take Wilson's name down from campus buildings are the same reasons why he made this list. President Woodrow Wilson never turned his back on a racist idea he produced at Princeton's Political Science Academy. President Woodrow Wilson oversaw the resegregation of the federal government. Black federal workers were fired, and those that remained faced separate and unequal workspaces, lunchrooms, and bathrooms. He refused to appoint a black ambassador to Haiti and the Dominican Republic, as was the custom. And Woodrow Wilson and Professor Wilson and then President Woodrow Wilson unapologetically backed, as he called, the great Ku Klux Klan and championed the Klan's violent disenfranchisement of Southern African Americans in the late 19th century. Woodrow Wilson began the brutal two-decade U.S. occupation of Haiti in 1915, preventing Haitians from self-governing. And possibly the most egregious was the Versailles Convention setting World War I in 1919. President Woodrow Wilson effectively killed Japan's proposal for a treaty recognizing racial equality, thus sustaining the life of European colonialism. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he made number 6 on the list. the 32nd president of the United States from 1933 to 1945. Eleanor Roosevelt's storied life on the civil rights front could not save her husband from making this list. Neither could the storied life of activity on the racist front of his Uncle Tom, his Uncle Theodore Roosevelt, save him. FDR's racism was even more impactful than his Uncle Ted. President Roosevelt's executive order in 1942 that ended up rounding up and forcing more than 100,000 Japanese Americans into prison camps during World War II was arguably the most racist executive order in American history. He thankfully spared Germans and American Italians from military prison, but he still showed his racism. And while some the White House competitors, excuse me, and while some of the White House competition in 1936 Olympics received invitations to the White House, Jesse Owens did not. Roosevelt's snub of the four-time gold medal winner came around the same time he was pushing through Congress all of the job benefits in his New Deal, like minimum wage, Social Security, unemployment insurance, and unionizing rights. Farmers and domestic Southern blacks were excluded from the New Deal, and the federal relief was locally administered, satisfying Southern segregationists. Northern segregationists was also satisfied by the housing discrimination in the New Deal initiatives, like coding black neighborhoods as unsuitable for new mortgages. As such, black communities remained buried in the Great Depression long after the 30s, while the New Deal policies, combined with the GI Bill, exploded the size of the white middle class. Thomas Jefferson, number five on the list, the third U.S. president from 1801 to 1809. By the time Thomas Jefferson took office in 1801, his all men are created equal was fast becoming a distant memory in the new nation's racial policies. Jefferson had emerged as the preeminent American authority on black inferiority. His racist ideas, blacks are inferior to whites in the endowments of both body and mind, and his perennial best-selling notes of the state of Virginia in 1787 were that impactful. His notes were used for powerful American rationalization of slavery after the American Revolution. In the book, Jefferson also offered the most popular race relation solutions of the 19th century, the freeing, civilizing, and colonizing of all blacks back to barbaric Africa, as he wrote. President Jefferson also applauded the pushing to Congress to pass the Slave Trade Act of 1807. Then again, a new evil replaced the old. The measure closed the door on the nation's illegal participation in the international slave trade in 1808, but flung open the door of the domestic slave trade. Large slaveholders like President Jefferson supported this law since it increased the demand and value of their captives. They started deliberately breeding and enslaving Africans to supply the demand of planters rushing into the Louisiana Territory. With Jefferson with the Jefferson purchase from Napoleon in 1803, I considered a woman who brings a child every 2 years as more profitable than the best man on the farm, Jefferson explained to a friend in June 30th, 1820. We're coming down the home stretch. Number four on this list that he wrote is James Monroe, the fifth president, 1817 to 1825. If Jefferson was the brainchild of a colonization movement, then President Monroe was the pioneer initiator. Weeks before he was elected, candidate Monroe watched and supported the formation of the American Colonization Society, presiding over the first meeting. The House Speaker Henry Clay at the time tasked the organization with ridding our country of the useless, pernicious, and dangerous population of blacks from the ignorant and sending them to ignorant and barbarism of Africa. By 1821, President Monroe had seized a strip of coastal West African land. This first American colony in Africa was later named Liberia, and the capital was named Monrovia, after James Monroe. It was another namesake that really thrust Monroe on this list. We declare that we should consider any attempt on their part to extend their system to any portions of this hemisphere as dangerous to our peace and safety. Thus said President Monroe in his seventh annual message to Congress. Several U.S. presidents used this Monroe Doctrine as a rationalization cord for the U.S. intervention into sovereign Latin American states, including the toppling of the government unfriendly to the U.S. interests. This Monroe Doctrine was as racist and devastating to Latin American communities abroad as the Doctrine of Manifest Destiny was to indigenous communities at home. In 2013, President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry declared the Organization of American States as the era of the Monroe Doctrine. Number three on the list, Ronald Reagan, the 40th president, 1981 to 1989. The arbiter of the welfare queen myth, who evoked the old slaveholder segregationist mantra of states' rights, perfected President Richard Nixon's infamous Southern strategy that was actually worked nationally. President Reagan attracted voters through radically coding appeals that allowed them to avoid admitting that they were attracted by racist appeals. He stood at the head of the reactionary movement that undid some of the material gains of the civil rights movement and black power activists. During President Ronald Reagan's first year in office, the median income of black families declined 5.2%, and the number of poor Americans who were disproportionately black increased by 2.2 million, a sign of things to come under Reaganomics. Then in 1982, Ronald Reagan announced his war on drugs. Inconspicuous at the time, but when the war on drugs was declining, we must mobilize all of our forces to stop the flow of drugs into this country, Reagan said. Reagan surely did not mobilize any of his forces to stop the CIA-backed Contra rebels of Nicaragua from smuggling cocaine into this country to fund their operations. He surely did not mobilize his forces to draw media interest and media attention to their spreading of crack cocaine in 1985. The media blitz handed his slumbering war on drugs as an intense media high in 1986. In the fall, he signed with great pleasure the Anti-Drug Abuse Act, which established minimum sentencing for drug crimes and led to the mass incarceration of black and brown offenders over the next few decades. Like his campaign strategy, Reagan took President Nixon's racist drug war to a whole new level, and the mass incarceration of black and brown bodies escalated under Bush two times, and Clinton, the Clinton administration, especially after Clinton's 1994 crime bill. And, oh boy, I didn't print out. Oh, yes, I did. Here it is. We got number two and is number one on the list. Let me take number two. Andrew Johnson, the 17th president, 1865 to 1869. This Democrat from Tennessee was sworn into the presidency after John Wilkes Booth assassinated Lincoln days after the Civil War ended, when Johnson, President Johnson issued his Reconstruction Proclamation about a month later on May 29, 1865, he deflated the high hopes of civil rights activists. President Johnson offered amnesty, property rights, and voting rights to all of the highest Confederate officials, most of whom he had pardoned a year earlier. He later ordered the return of land to pardon Confederates, making null and void, those wartime orders that granted blacks 40 acres and a mule and removed many of the black troops from the South. Feeling empowered by President Johnson, Confederates instituted a series of discriminating black codes and at the constitutional conventions that reformed Southern states in this fall of 1865, the intermediate post-war South became the spitting image of the pre-war South in name, in everything but name alone, as the law replaced the Southern masters. Number one on his list was Andrew Jackson, 7th president, 1829 to 1837. Yes, the president of the U.S. Treasury in planning and putting in the back, in the planning on putting Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill along with the most racist president of all time. Ironically, he attracted the same demographics, less educated, less affluent white men that Trump is attracting these days. Jackson stepped into the U.S. presidency as the wealthiest Tennessee enslaver and military general who had founded and spearheaded the Democratic Party. Jacksonian Democrats, as historians call them, amassed a winning coalition of Southern enslavers, white working people, and recent European immigrants who regularly rioted against abolitionists and black communities and the civil rights activists before and after the Civil War, when the mass mailings of anti-slavery tracts captured national attention in 1835, President Jackson called on Congress to pass a law prohibiting, under severe penalties, the circulation of incendiary publications. In the following year, Jackson and his supporters instituted the infamous gag rule that effectively tabled all anti-slavery petitions by Congress. And yet, it was his Indian removal policies that were the most devastating of all on the lives of Native Americans and African Americans, beginning with the Indian Removal Act of 1830. President Jackson forced several Native American nations and relocated them from their ancestral homelands in the southeastern United States to areas west of the Mississippi, all to make way for those enslaved Africans being forced and hauled from the Deep South into other areas. President Jackson helped forge this trail of Native American tears out of the Deep South and the trail of African tears into the Deep South. So that was his list, Richard, of the 11 most racist presidents. And I'm going to add some other comments. Johnson was a Dixiecrat. And it's kind of ironic that all of the civil rights, some of the civil rights bills, the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Bill of 1965 was signed under Johnson, under pressure. Johnson was a Dixiecrat and a racist. They released several tapes of him using the N-word in meetings. I mean, come on, this man was no friend of the black community. Let me read a couple of these comments. Because there's comments here about some of these presidents. Dwight Eisenhower, the fact that blacks are entitled to political and economic opportunities does not mean that they have to mingle socially or that a Negro should court my daughter. Well, I agree with that statement. John Garfield, I have strong feelings and repugnance when I think of the Negro being made a political equal. I would be glad if they would, could be colonized and gotten rid of in a decent way. Teddy Roosevelt, which was Franklin Roosevelt's uncle. Blacks are a perfectly stupid race. In 1901, he wrote, I have not been able to think of any solution to the terrible problem offered by the presence of the Negro on this continent. He is here and can neither be killed or driven away. William Howard Taft, on black folks, your race is adapted to be a race of farmers, first, last, and for all times, he told a group of black students at a black college. And the last comment made here is by Lincoln, supposed to be the great emancipator, a friend of black folks. That's how they want to historically describe him. This is a quote made by Lincoln. I will say then that I am not, nor have ever been in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of white and black race. That I am not, nor have I ever been in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. I will say in addition, this is not that there is any physical difference between white and black race, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social or political equality. And so much as they cannot so live, when they do not remain together, there must be the position, if they do remain together, there must be the position of superior and inferior. And as much as any other man, I am in favor of having the superior position assigned to the white race. I say upon this occasion that I do not perceive that because the white man is to have the superior position, that the Negro should be denied everything. So, you know, Richard, that statement that he made is something that politicians use as a mantra, even though they don't say it. White supremacy has used that as a mantra. They tout a mantra of having a free society and equality, but they always want the European to be in the superior position. All of the laws, everything else, is geared in that fashion. So Europeans will have the superior position. So when you hear this man making statements, the listening audience, when you hear this clown that's in there now making racist statements, don't be appalled. These things have been made by other leaders of this country, and more quotes that are not even listed here. This man only, this brother, Ibram Zendi, only listed 11 of them. If you look historically, it's a lot of them that have made that believe the same way this guy. This is no anomaly. This is no, oh, he's different than everybody else. The thing is, you don't hear no crescendo of other politicians saying that he needs to go. If this was such appalling to both Democrats and Republicans, especially white ones, then you would hear a crescendo of saying this man got to get out of here. He needs to be impeached for just statements like that alone. But you don't hear that.
And they tried the impeachment thing. So, you know, was that the representative from Texas?
Well, they told him not to push that. You're talking about Al Green.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not in a position to dictate any of that. You know, he's stepping out of bounds there. You're in the second position, according to what Lincoln stated, according to the position of white supremacy. You overstepping your bounds when you're making statements in reference to what should be done with a white person in power.
Yes,
let me grab a couple of these callers here that's been waiting. Let's go to 646. 646.
Yeah, what's happening, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot? How are y'all good brothers today?
Hey, sir, how you feel?
Doing fine.
Hey, Richard, did daddy gave you a cold, man? They got you no heat at your place. What the hell going on? Did daddy supposed to at least give you a little bit of heat? What's wrong wrong with you?
Now you just got finished hearing him say that, and 45 said he equates himself. I think he had a picture of Andrew Jackson on his wall.
Yeah.
That's the president he has on his wall. Now, do you expect me to think that I'm going to get any heat?
When... I know, brother. You can't expect nothing from the Urugu other than what he say and what he do that's not against your best interest. Listen here. You know, I have to give the whack job some credit. He told the truth about Haiti. It is a shithole country. Now, the reality is he didn't tell the whole truth. The reason why it's a shithole country is because of America and France. Let's be clear. And also their desire to be at the knees and the foot of the daddy. You know, we got to be honest about this situation here and what he said in regards to the Haitian people. You know, we can't in situation and make it seem like he's lying about a situation that is absolutely caused by him and his brethren.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a.k.a. Hillary and Bill Clinton. See, the problem is when you start speaking that type of truth, you then have to be ready to hold America accountable for their wickedry. We don't want to do that. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You'll never hear nobody on terrestrial radio or on television tell the truth about the relationship between America and Haiti. It's just not going to happen. You know what I mean? They're just trying to make it seem as though we have been helpful to Haiti, that the Haitian people have problems and all of these things. But they'll never tell you about the rice deal to where as they have to purchase rice when they can grow their own rice. They'll never talk about all the other stuff that's been done to the country because they whipped America's ass at one time. You see what I'm saying? They'll never tell you about the reparations that the Haitian people have had to pay to France. You see what I'm saying? So the reality is, yes, it is a shithole country. But there's a reason for it being a shithole country. But nobody wants to address that. Nobody wants to deal with that. They just want to attack and go after the whack job who's in office when the process is doing all sorts of dastardly things to the American people that their brethren is going along for. For what reason? The protection and the growth of whiteness. That's all. And Negroes go along with it. Because they want to be able to oppress others like they do now. That's all. The Democrats get in office tomorrow. You think anything's going to change for Haiti?
Oh,
AKA Bill Clinton.
Absolutely
Barack
not.
Obama.
Yeah.
And all of the others. They did nothing to help Haiti. Why? Because you allow their so-called most talented to come over to this country? It's just like the Negro in America. Your most talented is going to be placed in a position, if they act and behave in a certain fashion, to succeed. That's why we're in the position that we're in as a people. Because they want to be able to incorporate the Negro into their madness. And what do the Negro do? The Negro go along with it. That's why he has no community. That's why, like I was saying earlier today, everybody talks about voting and all of this nonsense, but the reality is, if you don't have a community, I could give you my vote, put you in office, but what do I get back in return? You have no place to send the return to. But nobody wants to address that, and they want to deal with that because the nature and the want of the Negro king is to be incorporated into whiteness and to be accepted as close as he can to get into the arms of the daddy. He gets him either a white woman or another sick Negro woman. And what do? They continue the process and figure out how they could benefit from whiteness and be a part of whiteness. They don't talk about or try to build a community for their brothers and sisters. They're not really looking to have their brothers and sisters compete with them in their position in life. So they just smoke screening. And what happened? They live here. I live in the ghetto.
Remember, Jay, that when Elliot spoke about President Monroe and Liberia, and this goes on before that, that the intent was to move those free Africans because the problem that they said, the white planters and the bankers and merchants said, it was these free blacks that was a problem for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to find a place, not for the enslaved Africans. So when, say that again.
And what did Cecil Rhodes do in Liberia?
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know. I now don't know. Cecil Rhodes was more in South Africa, but you know, but the point of Liberia being the state emulating what Britain did with Sierra Leone for its captive or free Africans. And but my point is that. To try to make the parallel to the point that you're making, that these this particular group, this particular black, I'm gonna call it class, within those of Africans of descendants of slaves, they were a problem to because they had the classification of free, and it didn't necessarily have to be a mixed parentage. They had the permit to be classified as free, but by having that permit to be classified as free, they took certain liberties that they thought was entitled to that, which was to be equal to whites. And those whites who didn't want that to happen, the planters, because they were the people who assist some free Africans who had the audacious ability to be able to get out of chattel enslavement. They assist them into areas with their allies, the abolitionists, white abolitionists. They assist them to freedom. So they became, in that war, they became allies to one side of the, the system. Still a part of the system of white supremacy. I'm only making the point that what you're characterizing to me is that same group, and that they were always there to white leadership. They were more dangerous, and they were more of a problem than those who were in chattel slavery, because they thought that they had rights. And again, Ellie, you bring out through all those presidents. That they weren't considered to have the same rights, even if they were given. Unfortunately, as you say, Jay, people like myself have the opportunity to go and work in the big house.
Well, I've worked in the big house myself. I mean, the reality of the situation is that the argument in the narrative is never honest.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
That's my issue in all of it is tell the truth about the reason why Haiti is a shithole and why African countries have a certain problem and put it on the table and hold responsibility for it. It's the same thing with this Russian nonsense. How could you be mad at Russia when you go about and do the same thing around the world? You're a hypocrite. You're dishonest. But the sad thing is that the Negro never wants to hold this Yorugal accountable for his actions and behavior. So hereby, we're now in this position to have to see these clowns constantly talk about this dirtbag that's in the office who's just doing what he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's protecting the interests of white folks and trying to grow their position. Just like Obama was in office and was protecting the interests of the empire and trying to grow it when it was at a certain state. He did his job, and now this fool is in office continuing the job on another level of protecting whiteness, because he knows and they know that their position is dwindling in regards to their livelihood and their population.
And it's two things that you know, if I may raise in your analysis, which I agree, that I think we should look at. And again, from the perspective of the consciousness of victory, we should look at, even though he says with whatever that characterization, it's not true, because they know that the Southern Hemisphere is organizing. And if we use, unfortunately, Libya or Gaddafi on this side, or Chavez, well, I mean, on that side, and Chavez on this side, that there's a group of those in those countries, and you look, use the Caribbean, who is asking for reparations. There's a group of statesmanship who are saying to the European West, while they are fractured, because they in 08, it showed that they were fractured, right? That they couldn't even hold up their own, like they needed somebody else to assist. They sold us. Our system almost collapsed. Our economic order almost collapsed in 08 because they were gambling so hard. And they know that the African population is the youngest population and has the most vitality. And it took the Grenadian president to reinforce that to the French president, which was an echo to the west of the European world, that we know our station and we know what we can do. And we don't want a handout. And Ghana is given dual citizenship, and the Caribbean countries are asking Europe for reparations. So that's one side that in our consciousness of victory that our analysis should look at. On the other side, which I think that most people are pushing Trump, you know, this language of what he said, but he also said we should be looking at Norway, right?
Yeah, but Norway, immigrated people in Norway don't want America.
Why would
the Norwegians want to come to America when it's not beneficial to their growth? They get all sorts of benefits that America is trying to take away from their citizenship that they already have it. So why the hell would I leave Norway to come to America? That don't even make logical sense. But that's whiteness that he's requesting. He's requesting whiteness to come forward.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's important. And you'll see at the end of the month, he's going to go. They said there is no other president in the last 15 years that went to the World Economic that thing in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Now he's going there with his business team, because that's what he offered Norway. That's when the ambassador, the president from Norway came here. He was saying, let's make a deal. I agree with you. What he's trying to do is consolidate another white, to reconsolidate, because Europe is bankrupt, BRICS is bankrupt, Russia is getting a bad rep. So if he can go to the Scandinavians, which, you know, those guys, they got all the money still off of the slave trade, but you don't hear no talk about them because they ain't got no black folks there, right?
Yeah, but the reality is, I don't think he has the intellect nor the intelligence to pull it off.
Well, we'll see.
I don't think he has what it takes to make it do what it do. He hasn't shown. Has he shown it to America that he has the intellect and the ability to do what he do yet? I haven't seen it.
But what they're doing is, I mean, and I don't mean to push it, but I agree. But what it seems like he's doing, what he did with Saudi Arabia, what he did with Israel, he thinks he can buy his way, or they. And I don't want to put it on. He don't have to have the intellect, right? I mean, if we make our analysis from the perspective of the deep state more than this here actor, this entertainer, who just happens to be in the billionaire club. If we make our, because it's about the, as you said, it's about the American empire trying to maintain its dominancy. And one of the ways is by printing money, you know, just with its printing press. And on the other way is saying, we got guns. And as he said, we got a bigger gun than your gun. And that's the only two things they got. Now, they've shown that even with their money, the thing has collapsed. And even with their guns, they can't win. They can't win from Korea, Vietnam, you know, this now, even with this non-acting state. Now, they can have all of, now they're doing it through technology, but they haven't been able to win. So, and by not winning, they're draining their resources. And what they're saying, they'll take it from their people, which was what Roosevelt did, right? Shifted from the business people, the DuPonts and the Rockefellers, saying, well, we're going to tax y'all at 90% so that these workers, so we won't have revolution by these white workers in this country. That's 30s and 40s. And as you said, Elliot, you know, those were those programs, those transfer benefit programs. Now they're saying, we taking all that back, this generation. And they got him going around and saying, let's make a deal.
Well, all I can say is, I ain't got time to be upset and mad at that nut job over an honest and truthful statement, man. I just want the statement to be clarified and put into its proper context in regard to the truth of the matter. Hey, look, Haiti is a shithole, and I know a lot of Haitians. I done dealt with Haitians, and, you know, I'm going to honestly say, from my dealing with them, I found them to be extremely funny, man, because I worked with them on the level to where, as they love to talk politics, man, you know, a Haitian will talk more politics than a little bit. And like I always used to say to shut them up, is, well, what about your damn country? Why don't you develop and build your country up? Why don't you make your country better than coming over here getting caught up in this BS? Why don't you stand up against the oppression of your people by this country? But, you know, they never want to deal with that. You know, their whole thing is, you know, I'm in America or this and that. You know, and they love the French, man. They got the most Stockholm syndrome behavior in regards to the French that I ever seen in my life, man. Oh, they love the French. They always want to talk that poufasse or all that other nonsense. And whatever I ask them about, well, why do y'all tolerate as a nation still paying the French reparations? And they used to look at me like I was crazy. And at that point in time, I just figured out, you know, what they were and what they were about. And, you know, I always had to keep them in the position that, you know, if you get out of line, I'll knock you out. And I had to knock one or two out over my course of time, because they like to get big and bad, and they like to loud talk you. They love to get around their brotherhood and loud talk you. And I'm a firm believer, because I grew up in the 60s and the 70s. I'll pop your jaw if I have to. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, there's some of them that have come to this country that I know of, very nice, made their money and went back home and tried to do their thing. And just like, you know, what happened over in Puerto Rico, there's a lot of them there that have done the same thing. But I don't know if y'all noticed or if y'all been hearing about what's going on in Puerto Rico. white folks are going over there to Puerto Rico and buying up as much land as possible, giving people thousands of dollars to get their land and stuff. So not only that money, but come to the U.S.
But not only in Puerto Rico. I think they said that, what's that actor? De Niro was doing that in St. Thomas. Yeah, down in
there. But you don't even hear about the destruction that went on in the Virgin Islands in regards to that same hurricane.
No, you don't.
That basically destroyed Haiti. You know what I mean? You don't even hear about that. You see what I'm saying? But yes, they are going over there, buying up all the land, and what they'll basically do is turn it into a Yerugal playground. Have tourists go over there, you know, have sex excursion and all sorts of decadent type thing. And you know what I mean?
Well, look at the Gullah Islands here. Isn't that what they did here?
I don't really know if they've been able to totally purchase it yet.
I've just seen the report. Yeah, I mean, Gullah, and that's their thing because they're trying, you know, that's those, and we call it what is it, gentrification, which is no different, right? You know,
the reason why I said that, Richard, is because, you know, I like to look at the Travel Channel Bizarre Foods. And one of the guys did a show. Zimmerman, he does a show. And he was at the Gucci at the Gullah Islands. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, and the woman that he was there, you know, she was doing her possum and all of that stuff, you know, making that possum and, you know, good eats. And, you know, the rabbit, the squirrel, and all of that stuff. And the thing was, she was basically saying that she's not gonna give up the land. She was gonna hold on to the land, but they didn't show that. But maybe you're right because you know, in order to get on the island, you have to take a boat. You know that, right?
Right, right. And if you go to YouTube and punch it in, you'll see an expose on what they're doing. And the thing that bothered me and speaks to your point all the time. Because there was a black developer that came who family had it because it's communal owned land. It was considered communal, aired land. And so what they had to do was get one person to sell. And if they one person sell, then all the others can sell. But if none of them sell, they can maintain the land. And this one person who had family had property down there, and he's a developer, and he's selling. He's making his money, and it was disheartening to hear, you know, his commentary in relationship to, well, you know, this is the future, you know, and this is a black, you know, from New York, a black person from New York who came down there, and he's selling the land to them. And they are trying to hold on, just like in Barbadoo. They have, now there was from the 1800s under communal land. And the same process. And this Irma is now the legislator put in a law to try to get them to, well, saying, well, since you don't have enough money to rebuild, if we get you to individually purchase, then you can go to the bank and get a loan to rebuild. But compared to that, it's communal land. And they're having, I mean, right now, they're going through that political debate now. So it sets up this point, you know, that this globalness of the new this African who is a part of the European project, you know, and then it's, and hopefully I'm not being presumptuous, then it's us. And that's why it's so important for us to have our analysis clear, because we can be telling them, as you say, we can tell those Africans who want to participate in the process, look, now you should know you ain't getting none out of it. But go ahead, if you're going to do this, thinking they're going to give you something, go ahead and do this. But like, we all on the same ground. So
either leave me alone when I go after my thing, or I'm telling you where they got the hammer at. And if you can't see it, they gonna hit you in the head. And the thing is, they acting like they don't want to see it, and every time they get hit in the head, but some of them benefit.
That's deep, man. I didn't know that was going on that island.
Yeah, look it up. It's going on there right now. I mean, they just passed.
You know what's so funny about that whole narrative is that's probably happening down in the South. But the thing is, you know, a lot of people are moving back down into the South right now, and that's a perfect place and a perfect opportunity for us to build community. I'm hoping, Brother Elliot, that you could get Chukwuemeka Lumumba Jr. on the show to talk about what's going on in Jackson, Mississippi, because Jackson, Mississippi may be the test case of where we as a people could develop community.
Yeah, I've been working on trying to get somebody from down there to be back on the show. I mean, he was on here before, but we've been in touch with several other folks, you know, that was the architects of that movement, put it that way. So
because you know the thing is that's how you build community.
Oh, I agree with that.
I don't know, see my whole thing. When I talk about building community, I always go into the premise of how are we going to be able to economically sustain ourselves. You see what I'm saying? So that's the way I look at community. I look at it in a sense that we have to be in a position to develop and grow not only institutions but the land, feed ourselves, and do all of those things. That's what has caused our people a problem in these urban centers is that we live in urban centers, but we don't control our food. We don't control how we wash our clothes. We don't control our schools. We don't control anything in these urban centers that would make a community what it needs to be. So this is why we're having the problem that we're having to where every other ethnic group is coming into our so-called communities, a.k.a. Harlem, and we're constantly purchasing from them. You can't do that to a Jew. You can't do that to a Jew. I can't go into a... There is no community in the United States as a black man, now listen to this, no community in the United States as a black man that I can go into and open up and set up shop. No place.
Mm-hmm.
Because the community is not going to sustain me to build the type of necessary structure on the long haul. But every other community could come into my community and open up a shop. I could have the best donuts in the world, the best whatever, but I can't go into a solid white community, Puerto Rican community, any other community and open up a shop.
Well, you know why, Jay? Because they're in control of their communities, and we're not.
But that's what I'm saying. Because why is that? It's because our best has left the community to go live there, the Yoruba, and them.
And even with them, they don't even control their mind, because you can't create community. Which then the cultural artifact of controlling your mind is the behavior of your relationship with each other. But if your mind, you don't control your own mind, you know, then somebody else controls it. And if that person is, you know, that's the issue is with us. And when you look at the environment, I don't know if you know, now you can't even say it, but when you look at the environment, what is it that we do that control our mind from the cradle to the grave?
Nothing.
What institution that we have that controls our mind, therefore our behavior, therefore our cultural output from the cradle to the grave?
Nothing. We don't even educate our children in regards to the miseducation of our children. We don't have independent schools. Mm-hmm. We do have some, but do you think that we should be going to these other institutions? How is it, in all honesty, in all truthfulness, that the Catholic school system is still in business? With the wickedry that they have done to African children in regards to molestation, mm-hmm. but they're still educating our children.
Because the mind says that education is better than our education.
That's it. I got a niece that just graduated from supposedly the top Catholic high school in New Jersey. She went to college. She had to drop her first, I think it was calculus or algebra, math course to take a lower course, and she still got a C.
Mm-hmm.
But now they should have been able, for all of the money that my sister and her husband supposedly paid for, to be able to go into college and do her thing. But mind you, she went and got a C. Even though I told her, but she didn't listen to me, you should get a tutor.
Mm-hmm.
She did it without getting a tutor, taking the lowest, because she thought in her mind that the Urugu had prepared her to mm-hmm. be able to deal. Even though she was smart enough to realize that the first class she wasn't going to pass, so she thought she would take the lower class and pass, but didn't do what she was supposed to do, like I told her, just go and get you a tutor. Go to the tutor. You're on the college campus. You're one of the few kids on the college campus that probably don't have to worry about nothing. You telling me you couldn't devote the time necessary, an extra 1 or 2 hours with a tutor to study, and here it is, you wind up getting a C. And when I'm trying to tell you that C is going to affect you on the long haul. But see, you can't, you know, but she thinks she know it. Her mama and daddy are professionals on the highest level. You know, these are lawyers and PhD Negroes. But you know what I'm saying?
Hey.
But you don't want to listen to your uncle who know these things because I'm too African. But yeah, I tried to warn you, but you don't want to listen. But now you're going to be saying another 3 or 4 years from now, damn, that C done really hurt me. And I tried to tell her, like when the college said she wanted to get into. I said, I'm trying to tell you, you're not Ivy League school material. But you're mad at me because your uncle wanted to tell you the truth. I'm not playing games with you. I'm trying to tell you what you got to look forward to and what you're dealing with. And when it was all said and done, did she get into an Ivy League school? No.
You know,
she had to settle.
Let me mention something to you before you leave, Jay, and then just kind of reflect back to what you first stated when you came on. The comments that Trump made about the and he included Africa in that. Africa and Haiti being a sugar honey heist tea hole. You know, I reflect back to the comments made by Dr. King in his later years before he got assassinated when he said, don't let anybody take your manhood.
Mm.
See, that comment that he made, he wasn't talking about the island, and he wasn't talking about Haitians or Africans. He was talking about the people. He said where they live ain't Sugar Honey Iced Tea or is a Sugar Honey Iced Tea hole. What he was saying basically is people of African descent ain't Sugar Honey Iced Tea. That's basically what he said. So do we as a people see, because I'll use the Black Caucus for an example. Would any of them stand up and say in Congress, I think Europe is a Sugar Honey Iced Tea hole? They wouldn't do that. And you would have whites here that would object to that. Why? I mean, whites here are Americans. They're not going to let you talk about Europe like that. They ain't going to allow it. They would voice their opposition to. They would voice their opposition to those comments. Strong opposition. Because you're referring to the land of their nativity and you're referring to the people. So we shouldn't allow that. For our children's sake, we should allow this European to say our people ain't. I think we're getting a little interference in the background. I think that's you, Richard.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we shouldn't, for our children's sake, we shouldn't allow European to make comments like that, that our people ain't Sugar Honey Iced Tea. We shouldn't allow that. And those chumps that sit in those seats, that Black Caucus, they're a disgrace. They need to put on a dress. I mean, they're not men, and some of them are women, but I'm talking about the men right now that are there. They're a disgrace, and I ain't talking about no, that's a racist comment. I ain't talking about no weak statement like that. They need to have a strong response to that fool saying that their people ain't shit. Because that's what he's talking about. He ain't talking about no land. Don't get it twisted. He ain't talking about no land. What he's saying is black people ain't shit. Because I don't put no distinction between, black, and especially when you're talking about Europeans, they ain't put no distinction about, oh, he's from Haiti, he's from Jamaica, he's from Africa. They're looking at you just like these comments I read by these past presidents. And let me read it again for the listening audience. This is what Theodore Roosevelt said, who was Delano Roosevelt's uncle. This is a quote that he made in 1901. Blacks are a perfectly stupid race. In 1901, he was quoted, I have not been able to think out any solution to the terrible problem offered by the presence of the Negro on this continent. He is here and can neither be killed or driven away. See, that was the that's why I stated in the beginning, this so-called Negro problem has been here with these Europeans almost since we've been here. When they started seeing it, well, we didn't work them for 250 years. I don't think we're going to be able to continue this. Anybody with common sense seeing that this wasn't going to continue over another 100 years, they knew it. But it was a problem because they didn't want blacks walking around free in society. His feelings is just what Trump said, but Trump's saying that they live in this type of environment. What he meant was the people ain't shit. And we shouldn't allow comments like that to come from a more filthy European, especially like him or any of them. Listen, I don't draw no distinction between Democrat, Republican when you're talking about Europeans. We shouldn't allow them to insult our people like that.
Yeah, but Elliot, them Negroes don't even see it that way.
I ain't talking about them because they're a problem also.
To contact what has been done to the Haitian people, or they won't admit to it. You got some of them who know and probably feel the same way that you do, but they'll never step up and make the correction or make the honest analysis on it. They'll never say what you just said, and you got some who feel that way.
I agree.
Think that way.
I agree. You got some of our people that feel exactly the way he stated, and that's sick. That's sickness. That's a sickness.
No, that's not sick. That's the reality of a people who have been placed in a situation to whereas there is a degree of so-called acceptance into whiteness. You can't expect nobody who has been placed in a position to not be oppressed on a certain level and beat down on a certain level to ever stand up against that one that has that power over them. Who would want to give, honestly, Richard and Elliot, who would want to give up the trinkets that Negro peas in this country enjoy? Who would want to give up the trinkets of a congressman, a congresswoman, a so-called senator, a Oprah Winfrey, and the rest of them Negroes? Would you ever want to give up that type of approval, acceptance, to be put back into your place of niggerhood? Nobody would want to do that, Richard. It takes very few men to do that. That's what makes men like Paul Robeson so great, man. That's why I always respected Paul Robeson. And in the end, Martin Luther King even figured it out. And you see what happened to him? He took the ultimate price. The sad thing was that he led us down this path of so-called integration and looking of acceptance from our oppressor to the point to now nobody can just make the analogy that you made, that this man, the so-called head of the republic, called us all nothing but pieces of sugar, honey, ice tea.
Mm-hmm.
That's the tragedy of our lives. So whereby nobody will never say what you just said, Brother Elliot, but they'll make all sorts of excuses about this character and call him this and that, a racist and that, but they won't put his racism into its most honest context.
And I'm arguing, and if y'all give me a couple minutes, I'm arguing they can't. Yes. Jupiter Harmon, 1787. And Elliot, you, in your listing, the Thomas Jefferson, I think it was a number around number five, right? 1787, he wrote the Notes of Virginia. This is a black man in 1787 in Connecticut. When I was at Hartford in Connecticut, where I lived during the war, I published several pieces, which were well received, not only by those of my own color, but by a number of the white people who thought they may do good among their servants. This is one consideration among others that emboldens me now to publish what I have written to you. Another is, I think, that you will be more likely to listen to what is said when you know it comes from a Negro. One, your own nation, and that seems to be an important point, that they're a nation. They see themselves historically, they're a nation, and color, that they're of their own same color, and therefore can have no interest in deceiving you or in saying anything to you but what he really thinks is your interest and duty to comply with. My age, I think, gives me some right to speak to you, and reason to expect you will hearken to my advice. I am now upward to 70 years old, and cannot expect, though I am well and able to do almost as any kind of business, to live much longer. Now, that was the first paragraph. He wrote this and presented it in New York. The paragraph that I makes to why I say they can't. Respecting obedience to matters. Now, whether it is right and lawful in the sight of God for them to make slaves of us or not, I am certain that while we are slaves, it is our duty to obey our masters. You hear me? This is 1787. Now tell me what we are saying now about them, that thinking, whether they're in Congress, whether they hold a billion-dollar company, whether they're professional managers, that thinking is any different today and being projected.
No, well, listen, Richard, it's not. We heard Cynthia McKinney last week say that she was told by a prominent member of Congress that's still in office. She didn't reveal his name. That what they say, that's what we do. You remember what she said?
Yeah.
So that feeling is still there.
And that's what I'm saying. We have to accept that that's a cultural, that's a position, and it has stratus, just as those of us who resist that have stratus. But they have stratus, and they will, and they have been, you know, Elliot, when you talk about collaborators and people who should get the, they have people who will stop. But we don't necessarily want to go to war with them, and we don't really necessarily want to go to war with the system of white supremacy. We want to continue the project of creation of our civilization. But these folks, Andrew Jackson, anybody, you look at that turn, they tried to negotiate with, like, just leave me alone. Maroon society, just leave me. They can't do it. And these black folks are supporting that. And if we don't accept that, then it's something that we're trying to do, in my opinion, that only engages us to do something that I think Baraka, Mary Baraka, tried to tell us in 67 when he raised in that poem, It's Nation Time, and he says, you know, higher sense of duty for African is, and brethren, urging them to raise above petty distraction and stay alert to the core of racism and where it stems from. That was his message to us. We can't get distracted by either side, either one of those, because being distracted takes us away from, in my opinion, us continuing to develop our project of, as you say, there are some independent schools, of being able to identify them, support them, and provide the resources for those who will continue to go on to that emergence, because we will emerge, we will be victorious, you know, and maybe that's just a confidence question, but this point about these guys and what they. No, they ain't gonna tell it. I mean, he said they to obey your master. Now we know where that came from, right?
Oh yeah.
But they've been saying that we can travel that down through centuries, generations. And it don't matter whether you're on a low or a high, the mindset is there.
Jay, listen, man.
Brothers, y'all have a beautiful weekend, man. Brother Richard, get yourself well, because you know you got a job to come to on Sunday before you go back to the daddy. You know what I mean? So have you some hot tea, put a little rum or brandy in it or something, or maybe glass of cognac.
Oh, now he done had cognac.
You know, Elliot know about these things, so yeah. Elliot will tell you the right concoction to come up with. But you know, the thing is, stay away from the tequila. The tequila ain't gonna help none. So, you know, I would put a little brandy in with a little bit of tea and lemon, you know, and just sit back and watch the football or whatever you do, what you do. And Brother Elliot, be good, my brother. Keep up the great work that you do, the best radio talk. Hosted talk radio, baby. Ain't no one like you, Elliot. They need more like you, man.
Yeah, we'll talk
soon,
Jay.
You need to be on terrestrial radio, you know, doing what you doing what you do again, man, so they can hear that velvet voice, man, putting these Yerugal clowns in their place. Hotep, brothers, have a good night.
Talk to you soon. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's the line open. You can give us a call. We got about 20 more minutes left, Richard.
Okay,
we'll go about 20. Yeah. We'll, give us a call. Line is open, 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
My reason for believing in extremism, intelligently directed extremism, extremism in defense of liberty, extremism in quest of justice, is because I firmly believe in my heart that the day that the black man takes an uncompromising step and realizes that he's within his rights when his own freedom is being jeopardized to use any means necessary to bring about his freedom or put a halt to that injustice, I don't think he'll be by himself. I live in America where there are only 22 million blacks against probably 160 million whites. One of the reasons that I'm in no way reluctant or hesitant to do whatever is necessary to see that black people do something to protect themselves, I honestly believe that the day that they do, many whites will have more respect for them, and that there will be more whites on their side than are now on their side with these little wishy-washy love thy enemy quotes that they've been using up to now. And if I'm wrong, then you are racialist. Point out, I'm also an American Negro, and I live in a society whose social system is based upon the castration of the black man, whose political system is based on castration of the black man, and whose economy is based upon the castration of the black man. A society which in 1964 has more subtle, deceptive, deceitful methods to make the rest of the world think that it's cleaning up its house, while at the same time the same things are happening to us in 1964 that happened in 1954, 1924, and in 1984. They came up with what they call a civil rights bill in 1964, supposedly to solve our problem, and after the bill was signed, three civil rights workers were murdered in cold blood. And the FBI head, Hoover, admits that they know who did it. They've known ever since it happened, and they've done nothing about it. Civil rights bill down the drain. No matter how many bills pass, black people in that country, where I'm from, still our lives are not worth 2 cents. And the government has shown its inability, or either its unwillingness, to do whatever is necessary to protect life and property where the black American is concerned. So my contention is that whenever a people come to the conclusion that the government which they have supported proves itself unwilling or proves itself unable to protect our lives and protect our property because we have the wrong color skin, we are not human beings unless we ourselves band together and do whatever, however, whenever is necessary to see that our lives and our property is protected. And I doubt that any person in here would refuse to do the same thing were he in the same position. Or I should say, were he in the same condition. One step farther to see, am I justified in this stance? And I say, I'm speaking as a black man from America, which is in racist society. No matter how much you hear it talk about democracy, it's as racist as South Africa, or as racist as Portugal, or as racist as any other racialist society on this earth. The only difference between it and South Africa preaches separation and practices separation. America preaches integration and practices segregation. This is the only difference. They don't practice what they preach. Whereas South Africa preaches and practices the same thing. I have more respect for a man who lets me know where he stands, even if he's wrong, than the one who comes up like an angel and is nothing but a devil.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And we're in open forum this evening, a Friday freestyle forum. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call and throw your issues into the hopper. And we can talk about it. Got about 12 minutes left in the program, so there's room for another call. If you choose to participate, you can enter the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Richard, you know, it was an interesting call that we had with Jay because he brought up a lot of different topics. And when he was talking about the businesses in our community and other nationalities coming in, setting up shop in the communities. They know where the money is. So you see all these nationalities, when they come to this country, they do run to the black community.
Mm-hmm.
But businesses create jobs. And if we don't have the businesses, then our people are at the mercy of being hired on jobs in a racist country. So it's only going to be a percentage of you working, period. Mm-hmm. This administration was touting the job figures, which was the lowest since they've been keeping stats. And keep in mind that our people have been suffering under almost double digit unemployment since they've been keeping those stats. Let me read from the published report. It says black unemployment is the lowest since the early 1970s when the government began tracking the stats. The black unemployment rate is 6.8% in December. It was the lowest since the Bureau of Labor Statistics started tracking it in 1972. a year in which the rate ranged from 11.2 to 9.8%. U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics unemployment measures unemployment through monthly household surveys called the Current Population Survey. Now, I've never received a call in reference to that, but that's how they measure this unemployment. It says not every household in the country can be counted, so the survey is meant to be representative of the U.S. population. The Bureau says about 600,000 households in specific geographic areas are used for this survey, which translates into approximately 110,000 individuals. The unemployment rate has obvious limitations. It can't differentiate between full and part-time jobs. It doesn't account for people who are unemployed. It doesn't account for people who are underemployed or working in jobs for which they are overqualified because they can't find a good job. It won't tell you how many people have become so discouraged in their job search that they have given up hope of finding a job. So you see all of these, you see what's going on here, Richard.
Which they call a U6 and a U5 in that statistical survey, the ones who are discouraged is the U5 and the ones that stop looking for work is U6.
Mm-hmm.
In the employment surveys.
Yeah, so,
And
I mean, it don't take into account, you know, and plus, those are December figures. And always around December, you get those holiday jobs, right. Service jobs.
Right.
And, you know, with companies like Amazon and all now, with people just throwing packages, you know, after that holiday is over in January, February, I'd like to see the stats come out in February when you see all those people lose those jobs. And plus, those jobs are not carrying benefits. Half of them is not a living wage, especially when you're talking about black unemployment. So you can't come on here. And plus, if you go into these cities, I don't know where they're getting this 6.8%. But, you know, I want to read this other thing dealing with the percentage of businesses created in the black community, but I might not get an opportunity the time, but I think we got a call here. Let me see if we can pull this call in. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello. Good evening to you, Brother Elliot.
Hey, how are you, sir?
Yes, sir. I'm doing fine. How are you?
Well, you should be asleep.
Say that. Sorry, I didn't get that. Say that again.
I said you should be asleep.
I should be asleep. You're right with that. But I was just catching up on some work, and I'm tuning into your great program, you know, and hearing what your brothers are saying. And it just caught my attention, especially hours today. I was reading the newspaper, headlines, Donald won't go south of the river. So some of the information which you spurred out, it just caught my attention. The newspapers here are having a field day with Donald Trump.
You know, for our listening audience, this is a new host that will be coming on to Time for Awakening in the near future, very near future. Brother Paul from over there in London is going to give a different perspective of what's going on the other side of the Atlantic. His show, Connecting the Dots UK, hopefully it will be debuting in February. We're working to get Brother Paul up and running. But I'm glad that you decided to take a flyer and call us at this late hour for you, Brother Paul. But I'm glad to have you be at least a preliminary part of the family until you start broadcasting. We're happy to have you coming on board, man. You're gonna give a different perspective of what's going on and give our people an international flavor of what we're dealing with.
Most definitely, Brother Elliot. You know, what I do find interesting, though, is that when we look at Donald Trump and the response which is coming from the UK government, the officials, a great deal of what we call MPs, which are the politicians in Parliament, they're the ones who are standing up and absolutely saying that they don't want this man here. Now, I don't know if this is president. This has ever been happened in history, where such a figure as professional politicians or professional, so-called professional people are outraged at this man, the embarrassment he's portraying around the world, and they are adamantly saying that they don't want him here. I mean, is this? I don't know. Do you know about this ever happening before?
No. Yeah, not to this degree. No. But I wonder, Brother Paul, is this because of how Britain, and what comes to my mind, because of BritX, and because of that Trump has the charisma with the population that relates to that kind of wanting to separate from even the EU, is that the fear of the parliament that he may get more traction than they want him to get?
See, that's a very interesting question. But in reality, on the ground, I would suggest that Brexit has nothing to do with that at all. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever it says in the media in the US, I can tell you as fact that Brexit was really supported by the grassroots, mainly English, white English people who were asking, for that the jobs come back to the UK. They were complaining, in actual fact, about jobs going to other parts of Europe. There is, when I listen to radio stations outside of the UK, I hear a lot of talk about immigrants, and it's black immigrants they're talking about. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you, it's mainly, crazy as it sounds, they're talking about other Europeans. See, the dynamics which get played out here in the UK is a little different than what get played out in the US. I mean, for instance, the dynamics between the English and the Irish have been extreme in the past, which do not get really played out in the US. So, the Brexit really was about, as far as I'm concerned, other Europeans complaining about other Europeans taking their jobs, mainly the Polish. Mm. So I wouldn't say it has to do with that at all. Not at all.
But Trump is, and when you describe the population that is dealing with immigration, that same population is the population here. And as you say, the difference is that it just so happens to be a population of color that those white working class is saying, those poor white working class is saying that they are taking the jobs away from. So the sentiment, it seems, are the same, and the class population is the same, but who they're talking about, as far as you say, the immigrants are different.
Most definitely. Let me say that there's always going to be that aspect of race, that saying, but predominantly, they passed an act, a European Act, which allowed free travel between UK and parts of Europe. So it was an open door policy. So you had a great influx of different European countries, France, a massive influx from Poland, and other European countries. But what the big outcry really was is that a lot of people who came from Poland were undercut. The as you rightfully put, the working class, and taking over, building and operating and those sort of utility type jobs.
Right.
So that was the big outcry, really. It was affecting them. For the first time, really, which I've seen in my lifetime, my parents came to this country from Jamaica. But so and they face racism. but it was the first time I witnessed, you know, racism against whites, even to the point of some Polish being assaulted and attacked. So they were, it's the first time I've actually seen that in my lifetime. Mm. So Brexit, no matter what your news is telling you, Brexit was about, let's call it, for the sake of argument, white on white violence.
Wow, okay.
You know, but that's not going to be reported in America. That's certainly not going to be reported. No, but
no,
this is what's been going on. You know, so that's what's getting played out in a political arena. And it still hasn't reached its pinnacle. There's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. Our Prime Minister, Theresa May, they keep complaining that she's sitting on the sideline and she's not really pushing for any, you know, proper Brexit, whether it's going to be a soft Brexit or a hard Brexit, as they refer to it. A hard Brexit means that this country just walks away without any agreement. A soft Brexit meaning that they come to some agreement, and it's this agreement, as they describe it, like a divorce, which they're thrashing out. And basically, Europe is asking the UK to pay a hell of a lot of money for this divorce. So these are the politics being played out. But in terms of Donald Trump, the reality is that one thing the English don't like, they don't like embarrassment. And I think he's a bit of an embarrassment. You know, they like to profess this thing, which I mean, I don't like to use these terms, but this thing called white superiority. They you know, obviously they are trying to uphold that in the world, stiff upper lip and whatever. But in reality, I think this man is becoming a bit of an embarrassment on the world stage, and people are speaking out. Professional people are speaking out. Mm-hmm.
Paul, I see one thing that a lot of the European countries and European descended folks have in common with the policies of Trump and even his predecessors is that they want other folks out of their country. You see, Trump made comments about people of African descent, talking about Haitians and the people on the continent. But you see that Israel is deporting because we shared with them, published report, is that they're giving them a couple of months to get out of Israel or be detained in what is considered detention centers or concentration camps. And they're doing it in different European countries. They want black immigrants out. Talk about it from what you're seeing there, and give our people a flavor of what's going on.
Yeah, I think a lot of the immigration is obviously connected to politics, and I think on the ground, there's always, if I tell you there hasn't been an underlying racial issue in a European country or in this particular country, UK, I'd be lying. Obviously, there is always an underlying racial issue. But as far as my information serves me, it was the entry into the EU, what we call the Economic Union, was supposedly one of business and trade. It was a trade agreement, which somehow manifested into a one state, like a one state Europe. Now, let me give you an interesting fact. When I came to America, I lived in America for a little while. It was the first time I ever heard people of the country I grew up in called Europeans. I had never heard a white person, those I went to school with, ever refer to themselves as Europeans. Never, ever have I ever heard that. It was only when I came to America when I heard others say, "Are you from Europe?" And it didn't sit comfortably with me. Most white people here do not look at themselves as Europeans. They see themselves as English, Irish, Scottish, and Welsh, you know. I think what the politicians were trying to do is, behind people's back, is forge this union, this one state policy within Europe. But I don't think it's what the people really wanted, you know, especially the working class people. They hold on to their so-called ethnic identities. And I think the push come is when it was getting apparent that more and more power was moving to Brussels in Germany. And there is a, you know, I mean, if I can remind, when I was a young person, especially for the Europeans, you couldn't even mention Germany. The hatred between the English and Germany was so apparent, it was untrue. You just couldn't even mention that word. As of late, obviously, politicians have moved to try and re-educate people on that to create this super state. So it's the people who have actually stood up, especially Europeans, and they said that they don't want to be part of this super state. They want to keep their sovereign identity. Britain wants to, they want to remain British. So you have a few MPs, one of them called Nigel Farage. He actually, I don't know if you're familiar with Nigel Farage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he formed a party called the UKIP Party. He was actually a minister of parliament, a politician in Central Europe. And if you observe his history, he's the one who basically went into Europe and told them that, as far as he's concerned, Britain would never join Europe. You know, Britain will not become another Greece or another France. So there was this thing where him and others, especially in the Conservative Party, you know, they would not let go of this sovereignty. And as far as they were concerned, they didn't see themselves as European, especially as one federal state. So that fact remains basically at the top of the mountain. And I don't think that is really being reported in America as it's happening. Brexit is being made to look more like it's all about immigration. But no, it's much deeper than that. And a lot of it is really about sovereignty. That's really what's being played out. But that's not to say that the immigration in terms of race doesn't play a part. But I think in the bigger picture, it's more to do with holding on to sovereignty. They do not. There's a large group of politicians who do not want to have Brussels dictate to them in economics or make decisions in terms of social policies and so on and so forth. So that really is the dynamics being played out. And then you've got another contingent of politicians who, you know, should I say this, are underhandedly trying to sell out the sovereignty of the UK. Whether that's a good thing or bad thing for black people, who's to say? Do you know what I mean? Some people say, well, it's best to stay in the EU because the EU has certain protections, certain laws which protect others. Certain people say it's not. So, you know, we time will tell.
It sounds like also that it's a question of, you know, and I agree with you. It seems that sovereignty issue on the populist or the, you know, in the nationalist level is really powerful compared to the international, the bankers, which are the ones that seems that will benefit most from the EU and what is how it's being presented here, globalism. And the bankers have, you know, they've already decided that they have no national boundaries, in relationship to the type of capital that's going to be generated and the growth potential.
Absolutely. Absolutely on point. That is absolutely the point. And then, as you were saying that, I was thinking to myself, if you look at, because you know that Scotland, which has a soft border between the UK, they had a referendum not so long ago, and they were actually, they voted to remain within the United Kingdom, but a great amount of them wanted to leave, and they want to be part of the EU still. So you've got that dynamic as well. And there's a lot of conflict there because some of their politicians are now asking for another referendum, despite the fact that the majority of the people voted to stay within the UK. So there again, you've got sovereignty issues. And then when you look again at Ireland, Ireland isn't actually part of the Great Britain, but obviously we have ties. They voted to come out of the EU, and somehow the politicians tricked them for another referendum and pushed them back into the EU. So,
yeah.
That, you know, I mean, before they were in the before they went into the EU, they were you know, the economy wasn't doing so bad, and then when they were forced to go into the EU, all of a sudden they were bankrupt. So the bottom line is, yes, you're absolutely right. There is that. You know, the global banking system are the ones who are behind the scenes who are trying to pull all the strings, and it's in their interest, obviously, to have no borders. And this is why, when I listen to especially chat shows in America, that you get that idea they want to concentrate the narrative around immigration, but really and truly, you've actually made the point. That is the point.
And that's what they're even hiding here by pushing the immigration, that is really about the bankers. And you know, it really came out in 08. I mean, how interconnected these bankers are amongst the European Union and amongst the American international banks. And it was a cascade, you know, all throughout the system. So how do they want, and they want to maintain it, you know, but as you say, that the national sovereignty, because I think Greece, that was the issue with Greece also, Greece more than Portugal, is that, you know, the Greeks want to maintain, even in debt, they want to maintain their national sovereignty to a degree.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we've got to make it clear that the other dynamic, we go back to Nigel Farage. It was funny that after Donald Trump became the president, he was the first one to turn up in America. Well, that was very unusual. And I think that kind of embarrassed the British government because no one gave him the authority to be there on behalf of the British government.
Right.
That he was offering a hand. How that happened, we don't know. But the thing is, from my observations, and I tell you, a lot of people might not agree with me on this, but I've been watching him a long time. And personally, I think that, you know, a lot of people, especially black people, will call him a racist. And I have no doubt that he has racist tendencies, but I think that I think he was a banker. He was a stockbroker, if I remember rightly. But if I watch his conduct in Europe, how he's conducted himself, he's always said, from what I've seen, that Britain shouldn't be part of Europe. And he's always claimed that the EU is a fraudulent setup. And he said that actually in the House. He's actually told them to their faces that this is a whole fraudulent, and they're not accountable to no one, which nobody seems to mention. And I'm not a supporter of him, but I've watched him and how he's conducted himself. So he basically single-handed, as far as I'm concerned, took on the European Union and basically beat them. He is Brexit. You know, I don't think you're not going to hear that over there. But that man really is Brexit. He's the one who went in there and basically rumbled them. So what his true agenda is, I don't really know. I really, really don't know what his true agenda is. We know that he spent some time with Trump in America. What that was about, we don't really know. So And, you know, there's no doubt that he does have some racist tendencies. But I think more than that is he's definitely a businessman.
Brother Paul, before we wind things down, let me ask you something, because you said that your folks came from Jamaica. You grew up there in England. You said you lived here in the States for a short time. Give us a flavor of the Pan-African mindset, the black community there in England, as opposed to in some of the other areas, even here, that you've lived. The conscious level of our community there. Give our listening audience a little gauge.
Well, we have a very strong and developing Pan-African movement in this country, in various different towns and cities. As to the percentage of conscious people, I don't know the figure, but I can tell you it's growing. I mean, this is something I've been on from I left school, before the use of the internet. And you know, at the time when I used to verse myself and study, there wasn't a lot of people to talk to, and that has grown, most definitely grown. Radio stations have grown, so I think there's a general consciousness awareness, a growing consciousness awareness. The dynamics where I've grown up in is consisted of mainly Caribbeans, Trinidad, Jamaicans used to be the largest group in the UK, black group. That's been superseded now by West Africans, Nigerians, who have, funny enough, not really emanated from Nigeria, have come from different parts of Europe. Okay. So that's happened within the last 15 to 20 years. So the dynamics have really changed. But it mainly consists of West Africans, Ghanaians, Nigerians, and those from the Caribbean, Jamaica, Trinidad, St. Lucia, and those places. And I think there's a very strong Caribbean influence, obviously. And I've always considered that Caribbean influence, especially like the food and culture, more closer to Africa than even maybe some of the Africans emanating from the continent. And, you know, I would say this, that my first instructions on Africa really come from Rastafarians. And I mean, that's a big movement in this country. Rastafarian, for me especially, was the one who basically told us to turn back to Africa. More than any African did. So for me, that's very important. And I have to say this, and I'll always say that, you know, because the Rastafarian was the first one to say, look back to Africa, you know, Africa, and talk about a black god and so on and so forth. I was in America, to be honest with you. I went there in the 80s. I was in New York, Brooklyn. And it was around there, but I didn't feel like there was so much of an African feel. I didn't get that feeling.
Okay.
You know, when I was there, in actual fact, to be honest with you, it's only since I started to listen to the radio programs I realized. I mean, my view, at which a lot of people who have been to America and come back felt that black Americans didn't really identify with Africa at all. That was the kind of talk which I kind of grew up with. It was like America almost was the center of the world, and America is America, and that's it. You know, I personally didn't feel that. I've got relatives obviously there, and they don't really identify with Africa as such. So, you know, it was that it's only, like I said, since the use of the internet, and I've been able to listen to people call in, and then I start hearing it, which actually surprised me, because I sometimes when I think, you know, it's a totally different picture than the time I lived there. it's almost like a different place. What I'm listening to, like programs like yourself and WOL and other programs, to me, it's almost like sometimes I feel like I'm dreaming. It's like a different or maybe it's an awakening, you know what I mean? But I must be honest with you, while I was living there, I certainly didn't get the feel that any black Americans really identified with Africa.
Okay. Well, listen, I'm glad that you're going to be with us to kind of give us a mindset of what we're dealing with. We can see that white supremacy have done its job. The system of white supremacy have done its job on the minds of black folks. That's all I'm interested in, on the minds of black people. And we still got some work to do. I don't think it's as monumental as we think, because it's an awakening going on all the time in all areas of the diaspora. I mean, you're a witness of it. So all we have to do is just keep doing what we're doing, and the word and the messages will get out there. People's mind will start changing. The next thing you know, you'll see people putting their hands to work and their minds to work. So, you know, I'm happy to have you with us. I'm going to be working with you to kind of get you up and running. And hopefully by February, man, we'll be all set.
But I look forward to it, you know, and I congratulate you on your work, you know, yourself, Brother Richard, and all those who contribute to this station. You know, I've been taking note. And it's absolutely on point, and it's the change is happening. Most definitely, it's happening, and it's for all of us to realize that the only change which we're going to see, the fundamental change, has to emanate from ourselves. So, you know, for that change to really take place, we have to look in the mirror and make that change happen. And we are the change. You know, we are the people or the ancestors we've been waiting.
We've been looking for. There you go. Yes, sir. I say.
Paul, I'm going to let you go, man. Go back to sleep.
And don't work too hard.
No, you take care, brother. And, you know, like again, thank you for the opportunity. And just keep up the work. We will get there and we will win.
Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Okay. Richard, that's a... Brother Paul, I'm surprised he called in tonight, because I know that, you know, at this, I think it's about, 5 o'clock in the morning over there, it's 4 or something like that. But, you know, we announced last week that Connecting the Dots UK will be coming on and debuting on Time for Awakening. So hopefully in maybe the first week in February, Brother Paul will be all set and up and running.
Mm.
Before we leave, I just want to... tomorrow's lineup, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we're scheduled again to have Black Reality Think Tank. Hopefully he's all set for his Time for Awakening debut.
Great.
Sunday. We'll be back Sunday morning with Revive at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Sunday evening, Time for Awakening is back at 7 o'clock. Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Wednesday evening, we're back with Revive from 8 to 10 p.m. On Thursday, Us Lifting Us, Black Economic Platform. Their program is 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. And then we're back on Fridays with Time for an Awakening at 8 p.m. Interesting conversation tonight, Richard. It's always good to talk with the listening audience, and I'm glad that Brother Paul did call in.
Yes, sir.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon,
the children playing after school. They seem to be so unaware of, I know, the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school. If we know, all we say we know about the problem.
To save the children.